The room lights dimmed for an instant. When they came back on, Christy and Jack looked through the porthole. The chair had vanished, and the jump mist was already dissipating. Christy unslung Ryan's rifle and set it down on the cart. Jack did the same with JB's M4000.
We're good to go. All we've got to do is find them.
When Christy and Jack rejoined Duck and Mildred on the 18th subfloor, they compared notes on what they had separately discovered, and the truth about Little Pueblo's demons started to become clear.
So the trannies were meant to be a doomsday bioweapon, designed to penetrate and depopulate the chain of Soviet redoubts after Armageddon.
And using the Soviets' own MATRAN system to get the weapons inside.
Quite an interesting strategy, really. If successful, it eliminates the threat of future enemy attacks. And taking control of the Soviet redoubts effectively doubles the available resources of the American nuke-cost survivors.
There's an ironic twist to the sighting of the project in this location.
Mildred pointed to Enid Mead's shelves of books on Native American prehistory.
Enid certainly knew about the existence of the Little Pueblo Canyon demon legend from her extensive reading on the subject. A demon that hates the light, that eats humans, that is spawned out of thin air like a ghost, that is unkillable like a ghost. From all the photographs she collected, I'd say she had a particular fascination with the vanished cliff people's culture. She and Bob had the power and the funding to make the canyon's ancient legend come to life.
We still don't know what happened here after Nuke Day. We know the reservoir drained away and the tranny or trannies got loose, but we don't know how or why they ended up in the dam.
It had to be an accident. Bob and Enid knew what their baby could do.
I agree that the Whitecoats had to understand the danger they were in once their creature was free. But why did they not just abandon the place? That would have been the simplest solution.
For the same reason the Vill folk are still here today. The desert is hell to cross. Odds of making it to the other side are slim. This canyon is an oasis. If the demons are kept under control and isolated in the dam, the chances of survival are pretty good.
Bob and Enid kept their lab subjects on the bottom floor of the redoubt. We need to go down and have a look at whatever's been left behind. With any luck, it'll give us an idea of how to fight the trannies.
Had the companions not taken a different route back to the elevator, had it not been for the sound of the huge pumps kicking in, they would have missed the hydro control station. As it was, through the closed door, they could hear a steady, loud churning.
That's mechanical.
Let's have a look.
Inside, they found a fully automated system running through a 100-year-old program. Steel-boxed computers and slave units covered an entire wall. They were decorated with flow meters and depth and pressure gauges. There was also a complicated illuminated system schematic with side channels, cutoffs, overflow pipes. Water flow direction was indicated by tiny blinking blue lights. If the scale was accurate, the underground structure extended all the way to the foot of the dam.
I think this may have something to do with maintaining the level of the lake. The water source is obviously the river, which is running below ground, somewhere between this floor and the surface.
Or perhaps the system of channels and pumps keeps the underground river diverted around this facility. It certainly was installed at the same time.
As they continued on to the elevator, they double-checked their weapons, making sure chambers held live rounds and mags were full. On the off chance, the lab section was still occupied by the spawn of Bob and Enid. Mildred pushed the button for floor 19. The car dropped.
Shit!
Elegantly put, Mr. Laura.
Suddenly, a torrent of water began to pour through the seam between the closed doors.
Shit!
JB poked the burning end of his torch and the muzzle of the cocked llama pistol into the gaping new hole, careful not to get any of the yellow slime on himself. He peeled slowly backwards.
The demon must have been waiting just behind the wall, ready to jump out when the next victim came past. I've never seen anything reverse direction like that. Pivot turn caught me flat-footed. I couldn't get a bead on it.
The stairwell isn't any safer for us than the hallways. Not when the bastards can bust through the walls and take us by surprise. That extra split-second advantage is all they need.
And all we need is enough time to get a message from brain to trigger finger.
Yeah, but buying enough time for us to get shots off is going to be triple tough. This is the demon stronghold, not ours. The fight is by their rules, not ours. And we don't know enough about either one to tip things in our favor.
They can be chilled, though. At least we know that.
J.B. glared at the ex-pilgrim. Wicklaw didn't argue the point. He was too busy squirming and scratching, his face flushed red and screwed up into a squinty-eyed grimace. The spray of demon goo had eaten lacy holes through the back of his robe, and some of it had gotten onto his skin. From the way he was acting, it had to have burned like hellfire.
We've got to move on.
With Jubilee in tow, Ryan and J.B. continued down the stairs. Wicklaw brought up the rear, shuffling on his bad foot, scratching at himself. It occurred to Ryan, and not for the first time, that every person dumped into the top of the dam would do exactly what they were doing, trying to reach an exit at the bottom of the structure. That was the only hope for a safe escape. If the demons had a grain of sense, they would have most heavily colonized the lower portions of the dam. At least in the beginning, they would have let the food come to them. As was the case with other predators, the oldest and strongest would control the best hunting ground. The younger, less experienced ones would be forced to prowl the edges of the prime turf, picking off strays and stragglers wherever they could, which probably meant the upper corridors. Even the young, inexperienced demons had nothing to fear from their prey. Humans were slow to react, easy to panic, and their weapons were ineffective. Ryan imagined the older ones fought the young ones to maintain their dominance. The demons could even be cannibalistic, he thought, which would explain the absence of their corpses in the corridors. Ryan knew he was making assumptions on slim evidence at this point. It was just as likely that the demons weren't concentrated on the floors below them. If the competition started taking victims higher and higher in the dam, it would force the older ones to abandon the lower floors or starve to death. After 100 years with the dam walls honeycombed by their tunnels, they could be anywhere. Everywhere. He and J.B. were sorely under the blaster this time. Not faced with a learning curve, as Mildred would have described it, but a learning cliff. And they were both hanging on the same frayed rope a mile up. As they reached the next landing, and its crop of acid-blackened human bones, the noise came from the floor above them.
The door!
J.B. turned, pointing his weapon past Wicklaw up the stairs.
That was the landing door slamming shut.
Shh! Listen.
You can hell, it's in the stairwell.
Jubilee, down! Get down behind me!
Wicklaw hurled himself, bad foot and all, between Ryan and J.B. Dropping his torch amid the yellow puddles and litter of bones, he lunged for the corner of the landing and cowered there, covering the back of his head with his hands.
Fire blast.
Ryan tucked the Galil's tubular steel buttstock hard into his shoulder. His finger tightened down on the trigger, taking up the slack, bringing it almost to break point. A shadow came down the stairwell, moving in great bounds, faster than the eye could follow. Long seconds before the streaking shadow appeared, Ryan held his aim steady at the middle of the flight of stairs. 3 heartbeats later, an instant before the shadow appeared around the landing turn above, he opened fire with the assault rifle, full auto, 600 rounds a minute, letting his target fall through the kill zone. The first three of the Galil's metal-jacketed 308s slammed into the stepwisers, cratering, shattering the concrete. The next 5 slugs hit something more resilient, something that trapped and absorbed the destructive power of their mushrooming tips. J.B. spun and tried to put his sights on the frenziedly thrashing and kicking demon. Wicklaw, crouching in the corner of the landing, his hand still protecting the back of his head, was desperately trapped. The wounded demon couldn't get to its legs, but it was still alive, and it was berserk. Thick white blood squirted through the .308 caliber entry holes in its chest as it snapped its torso, lashing out with its back legs, the serrated blade scoring grooves in the floor and wall. The demon moved so fast, hopping and jittering, flopping from one side to the other, spinning, that in the torchlight it was difficult to even get a good look at.
Head! Aim for the head!
J.B. leaned forward. The parabellum rounds entered the side of its skull, just behind the huge black eye, and blew out the other side, point blank, through and through. A quart of pale beige paste splattered high and wide across the wall, and sharp fragments of whatever its skull was made of rattled around the landing, singing through the air like shrapnel. Wicklaw frantically used the hem of his robe to try to wipe the creature's sticky brains and bits of its skull off his beard. On the landing floor, the demon trembled, head to foot, in its death throes. The armored plates along the sides of its torso quivered. All 6 of its legs quaked. Its jaws snapped as more of the white gunk bubbled out of the ruin of its head. Slowly, its back legs extended until they were stretched out straight behind it, and then it stopped moving. J.B. looked down at the locked back slide of his empty llama.
Red blast! That thing was hard to chill.
It's dead, Jubilee. You can open your eyes.
Jubilee did so, clinging to the back of his shirt, peering around his arm to blink at the thing on the floor. She was goggle-eyed and speechless. JB stood over the demon and held the torch close.
I thought it would be much bigger.
It's big enough to snatch a full-grown man off his feet and lug him away.
Triple strong for its size. It can't weigh much more than 100 pounds. Looks like a bug with all those legs.
Yeah, but the teeth. No bug was ever born with teeth like that. They look like they get cut through sheet steel. And it's got rows and rows of them, one behind the other.
Like a shark. Always growing new sets.
Ryan prodded a piece of the fragmented skull plate with the toe of his boot. It had a clump of black hairs, like thick steel wires, sprouting from it. The tips were cut or broken off on the diagonal, and looked needle-sharp.
Right blasted ugly sucker, any way you look at it.
That's too damn, Pilgrim. Praise Bob, praise Enid.
Funny.
With who knows how many more to go? We got at least 3 floors to cross before we reach the bottom of the dam. How many more bullets have you got left? I've got 4 rounds in this pre-dark pea shooter.
JB showed him the battered Smith Military Police 38.
5 shots is all I've got, assuming this blaster doesn't blow up in my face first.
Keep the llama. Maybe we'll find some more ammo for it.
Ryan slipped the Galil's web sling over his shoulder.
I'm keeping this, too. Just in case.
They found no unfired ammunition on the stairs below. No loaded blasters, either. There were lots more gashes in the walls, though. Gaping holes where the demons had popped out or bored in. And more bodies on the steps. Bodies galore. Ryan and JB had to boot the bones aside to clear a path. It was as Ryan had guessed. The bulk of the demon sacrifices seemed to be concentrated at the base of the stairwell. And not because they had tumbled down there from above. These bodies lay where they had died, stretched out, crawling to get away. From the fragile state of the bones, they were very old victims, maybe even from as far back as Bob and Enid's time. The skeletons lay 2 and 3 deep on the stairs. They appeared to be climbing over one another, as if still trying to escape. Though there were dozens upon dozens of them, the stench was much less horrible than higher up in the well. Below, the bodies on the landing were mounted waist-deep, a jumble of blackened bones that spilled up the staircase, covering the last 4 steps. There was a demon hole in the wall above them. Its goo looked congealed or dried up. Ryan kept his weapon pointed at it anyway. They stopped on the 5th step above the landing.
Looks like the end of the line.
There were no more stairs to the right, just an exit door, half blocked by bones.
How the fuck are we going to get through all that? There's yellow slime everywhere.
It was true. The collection of stripped human remains dripped with the stuff. It had spread out in a vast pool beneath them.
If you think we're going to carry you, Pilgrim, you've got another thing coming.
There's worse things than a little acid, Wicklaw. But you already know that.
Leave me alone.
Covering the hole with their hand blasters, Ryan and JB waded into the pile of eroded corpses. Ryan's boot heel came down on the side of a skull. Under his weight, it flattened to nothing, like he'd stepped on a pile of icy slush. The heaps of black bones fell away as they methodically kicked them aside and crushed them to mush underfoot. Before they got halfway across the landing, yellow slime coated their boots and spattered their trousers to mid-thigh, saturating the fabric. There were no wisps of smoke from acid-eating denim, no lancing pain from acid eating into flesh. The demon juice had lost its punch over the passing decades. It was still nasty, rank, and sticky, but no longer powerfully corrosive. Ryan and JB slogged through a bog of ancient death, and when they reached the landing door, they cleared away the barrier with their boots. The door opened onto a hallway like the ones they'd seen above, except the ceiling was lowered by the massive bundles of plastic pipe and galvanized electrical conduit that were strapped to it. The piles of bones that littered the floor were in similar condition to those in the stairwell. They squashed underfoot like rotten fruit.
What's keeping this place up?
JB had put his finger on the most remarkable feature of the corridor, the number of gashes in the walls. On both sides of the hall, there was a hole every 5 yards or so. Almost more holes than wall.
Maybe the demons are holding hands.
JB poked at the lip of a gash with the butt of his torch.
They haven't been down here in a while. Gunk is all hardened.
They had covered 75 feet of corridor, searching in vain for a doorway, a chute, some kind of man-made passage that might lead to the outside.